Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
Welcome to our first podcast for 2025. Later on the podcast, we'll be talking to Junction Community Centre because they had a visit from the Governor. And Sophia and Will are going to tell us all about it. We'll be talking today to Stephanie Harvey, CEO at Community First Development. Steph is a Bidjara woman from Queensland and a third sector leader and a career that spans government, community and not-for-profits. Community First Development is a First Nations-led community development and research organisation. They back the aspiration of First Peoples through community-led solutions. Welcome to the podcast, Stephanie. Really excited to have you on the program. Stephanie, tell us about Community First Development and how it all started and how you decided to create this organisation.
Sure. Thanks, Kerry, and thanks for the opportunity. I'm coming to you today from Ngunnawal Ngambri country, which is where Community First Development's head office is. Although we're a national organisation and we have staff right across the country, we're a First Nations-led community development and research organisation. Our goal, our pure aim, is to back the aspirations of First Peoples through community-led solutions. And we do that by connecting community with industry who share skills and expertise. And by doing that, we're creating two-way learning environments that unite First Peoples and non-Indigenous peoples. Our organisation moved to this model some years ago so that we could ensure that we are honouring the principle of self-determination.
Stephanie, you've also been a director of the Healing Foundation and you've been involved with remote communities for years. What actually led you to come up with this concept of the First Development? What's so important about that community-led for you?
Oh, Kerry, that's such a good question. So I've been the CEO here for a number of years. The organisation was doing really valuable work but needed to evolve, and we have a really deadly strategic board of directors, and we all started thinking about what would be best practice in our space. How can we take a development program that's already effective, but how can we make it truly in practice honouring First Nations ways of knowing, being and doing? So it was a collective decision. The board led the way, as they always do, to decide that we are going to turn this around. Rather than it being a volunteer organisation, our communities are going to be centred, and we're going to honour that principle of always being community-led. And the reason why that's so important, to go to your question, is we know that MOB have the solutions. We have the solutions in our own hands around the issues and priorities that are important to us. And we know that it's far more sustainable if it's community-led rather than imposed through other people.
Look, we all know that it's important to prioritise First Nations people, and a lot of the centres, well, all of the centres, in fact, have programs and services, and they're always trying to do that integration and involvement. Stephanie, I'm sure many of them would say, though, is they know they can do it better, and it's that whole concept of how do we do this? How do they go out there and bring First Nations people into our community centres?
Oh, Kerry, another good question. For me, the work that we do and the work that centres like the ones that you're talking about can practice is building relationships. So it has to be a genuine relationship so that people are feeling comfortable to come in, that it's culturally safe to come in, and that it is welcoming, and that it's not gammon. You know, it's easy to say, well, you know, put up a poster, create a program or activity that welcomes First Nations people. But I'd encourage your listeners and your practitioners to do the hard work. It's about looking at practices and programs and activities in community centres and building in those principles that honour First Nations people's rights and self-determination, and building those genuine relationships. And when that's put in practice, people come.
So in terms of bringing them into the centre, so they're not currently visiting the centre, or maybe just a few are, is it prudent for the community centre to go out to build those relationships to meet? Because obviously not everyone's coming to the centre. I often think of that, you know, Sister at Whoopi Goldberg, but you need to throw open the doors, the movie.
Oh, look, there is a little bit of that for sure. One of the things that we measure our success by, three principles that I think might be helpful, is are we working by invitation of the personal community? Is the initiative owned and driven by the personal community? And if it's offering practical support and delivering on what we're asked to do. So if we were to take those principles into how do you engage more at the centres to have people come in or your practitioners to go out? I think that first step is building the relationship. Let's not assume that what's on offer is what's needed or is what is being looked for by community. So having that conversation and bringing some people around you to say, look, this is what we can do. Is this of interest to you or should we be doing this in a different way? And it's going to change from people to community group. We're not one homogenous mass of people. So our needs change, the approaches change, and that old adage of, you know, one size does not fit all applies here even in a smaller geographical region.
And Stephanie, often when we want to find out things, the first things that we will do in traditional forums where we just say, well, let's do a survey, let's do a written survey. I can't see that working too well.
No, when I'm saying building a genuine relationship, I'm saying have a yarn.
Mm.
Pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm really interested in having a yarn about this. There might be a way that we can offer better support to you. Are you interested in talking with me about that so I can learn? Is it okay if I come for a visit? I don't know that you will get that rich information through a survey. And I think we need to remember that for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia, we are probably one of the most looked at, visited, surveyed people or group.
Fair call, Stephanie.
So how do we make that a priority for the people we genuinely want to engage with? It is as simple as having a conversation, and either you'll be invited in or not. People will say, you know, that sounds really interesting. I don't know that it would work for us. What we'd really be looking for is X, Y, Z. But if you don't ask the question through yarning and building that relationship, then I don't know that it will be successful through other means.
I'm talking to Stephanie Harvey, who's currently the CEO of Community First Development. Stephanie, does that also go for meetings? Because that's another thing that we practice, particularly in Western society. We must have a meeting for everything. Is that engaging for First Nations and Torres Strait Islander people?
Kerry, you're coming up with the good questions, I tell you. Look, meetings are important. It is how we have to do our day-to-day. I would encourage informal meetings and having a cup of tea. I don't want to make that sound like I'm dumbing it down. I'm trying to emphasise that it can't just be a meeting. It has to be a genuine relationship and genuine engagement. And I find I'm more successful by ringing, saying, hey, I've got an idea. I'd love to listen to what you think. Is it okay if I come out for a cup of tea? Do you want to come in for a cup of tea? How can we make this work? Because your voice is really important.
That's a really good way to put it. Stephanie, then, what are some examples you can give our listeners, because a lot of them community centres, of some success stories of that engagement where it's really worked well? What sort of programs has it resulted in?
Oh, sure, there's so many. There's an example I'd like to offer actually about CFD, but first off, just talk about a couple of programs out in community. So just to be clear, we don't deliver programs and services on behalf of government or funders. We support tailored solutions for what community is identified as their priority. And these range from youth diversionary programs to address the absolutely dreadful, appalling, everyone should be outraged, youth suicide rates for our mob, through to supporting people exiting the justice system with practical skills around literacy and numeracy and into employment. Fantastic organisation, Visual Dreaming, who has a strong local leader, Leanne Sanders, who recognised her desire to work with and respect guidance and leadership of elders and how to support local leadership. So she's created a youth hub and a physical building to enhance the cultural identity, mental health and leadership capabilities of Aboriginal youth. But honestly, it's pretty much anything that community can think of, our organisation can support, whether it's development of, as I said, a youth centre or apprenticeship training and skills. Women in Trades is another terrific organisation we've supported, right through to an organisation in Queensland supporting young people to get their driver's licence, because we know that's a barrier, right? We're all about being practical, solution-oriented. If young people don't have a license to get to a job, then they're not likely to be sustainable in employment. So having people sit with young fellas to build up their hours to get their license is a very simple solution, but quite a large problem.
Stephanie, great examples. Mm-hmm. Can I ask about volunteering? Because that's something all community centres need, volunteers. And I always say there's that great adage about, you know, if you want to help yourself, then help others. Is that something, and how should that be encouraged to ask Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, how would you do that to get them to come and volunteer? Would that be something they'd be interested in?
Are you asking how to encourage more Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to volunteer?
Yes.
I find that a difficult question to answer. I think one of the things that perhaps isn't understood by the general population is how involved we are in our communities and our own organisations. We don't see it as volunteering. We see it as our cultural, community or family responsibility and obligations, and we are already doing it.
That's a really good answer, because that's why I pitched it the way that I did, because we're asking in the way that we know, but as you're saying, it's like a foreign language, really, to be asking that.
It is.
Not knowing it's not your practice.
Well, exactly, but it's also not recognising that we are already contributing considerable hours as volunteers to the things that are important to us. So I think the challenge for other organisations or mainstream non-Indigenous organisations is, how would you make that important for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to see it as a priority? And again, the only way to do that is to have a cup of tea, ask the question, build that relationship. And if you're creating a space that is culturally safe, where people feel very comfortable and that their self-determining rights are being respected and things aren't being done to them, you know, that whole do it to them,
yes,
and for them, then it's more likely to be successful, I would say.
Thank you very much for the information. I'm sure the community centres will be very interested, because that's that thing where it's just looking at it in a completely different way. It's not until we have conversations like this with people like yourself that shared understanding becomes valuable.
Indeed. But, you know, the beauty of this, though, and certainly in our organisation, where we are providing skilled pro bono support through our communities, that is still also done in a self-determining way. Community chooses who comes on country. We can shortlist and select, but it is still their choice at the end of the day. But we've created an ecosystem where we are all learning from each other and supporting each other. It is just that the difference is it's community-led on a community initiative. And I'm a very strong supporter of opportunities that do bring us all together.
Of course. And Stephanie, look, just one more question around this before I lead on to something else. Is reconciliation, in terms of a lot of the reconciliation plans, people having committees, or say, oh yes, you know, we'll make sure we get somebody who's a First Nation person on the committee. What's your comments about that?
I think that's a great suggestion, and I think as many First Peoples on the committee as possible, the better. I would encourage your listeners, your practitioners and others, the centres, to focus on real reconciliation action plans. Don't feel you've got to put everything in there. It can't be gammon, it must be real, or you've really lost credibility and goodwill of the First Peoples in your area. So don't try and populate it or make it too expansive if you don't feel that you're going to be able to achieve it. Stretches are always great. I'm not saying don't put a stretch target in the reconciliation action plan, but stay with what you know. Try and make practical differences. Encourage your organisation to have more Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander businesses in your supply chain. You know, catering is a good example. I think I've seen far too many rap that have things in like, well, we're going to make sure all of our Aboriginal art has the appropriate naming on it. And that's great and appropriate, but how does that move us forward as a people? I'd rather that you are focusing on sustainable employment outcomes. I'd rather that you are focusing on increasing Aboriginal businesses in your supply chain. I'd rather that there's an Indigenous Knowledges Working Group in your organisation, so that policies and processes include Indigenous knowledges of ways of knowing, being and doing, and are creating a safe environment for your employees. I would rather that there's a reference group or an advisory group where your First Nations staff can sit in a safe space and provide relevant feedback to the executive. There are practical things that can be done in a reconciliation action plan, and I would really encourage our listeners to start there.
Oh, that's brilliant advice. Really appreciate that, Stephanie. Stephanie, just on that culturally safe and welcoming, community centres are place-based. How can they make their centres more culturally safe and welcoming?
I would recommend having a review, consider doing an audit, having an audit done by an elder. What people internally, but you know, when you're working closely with something, we don't always see it. you don't always see the thing. It's the same as if, say, you're developing a major brief for someone and you've looked at it and looked at it and you just don't see it anymore, frankly.
You're too close to it.
Yeah, too close to it. So I would encourage somebody casting their eyes over it. I would invite the elders group in. And I'd encourage the centres to have had built those local relationships with the elders group or traditional owners group in any case. But it requires being bold and brave and sometimes having to hear things or learn things that don't always feel comfortable, and that we have to sit sometimes in that discomfort to go, okay, is there resonance there? Do we need to change this? Is what they're saying true for our organisation? And I would encourage that external view to have a look and go, okay, well, what do you think makes this a safe place for either clients or Aboriginal staff? And go through that, and then, as I said, potentially sit with discomfort for a time and make the changes that are required.
That's really good advice. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure our listeners will too, because these are the sorts of things where we can sit around and debate this for ages. We should ask the people themselves, really.
Absolutely.
Stephanie, how can community centres better inform themselves about your work at Community First Development?
Well, we have a website and a YouTube channel, and they're both good starting points. We have a number of resources freely available on our website, so I'd encourage your listeners to check that out. We've received a lot of positive feedback about our community development framework, and that's a useful guide for practitioners to engage with MOB and reach out. We have a contact there that leads to an information box. We're happy to build relationships, use us as a resource or a sounding board. Connect with us, build a relationship with us too. We're all part of this journey. Your community centres are filled with good people striving to do good things, and we're all in that space together. So, yeah, reach out and let us know. We're happy to have a yarn and have a cup of tea.
Well, Stephanie, this was a great yarn, and I really enjoyed it, and thank you very much for joining our podcast today.
Kerry, I'm really grateful for the opportunity, and I hope you go well. Thank you.
Thank you. Junction Community Centre, they had a visit from the Governor.
So Sophia and Real, you have just hosted the Governor for a lunch. How did it feel, Sophia?
It was fantastic. The community sense was just beautiful and everyone really enjoyed themselves. The Governor is just amazing. She just blended into community and made everybody feel incredibly comfortable. She was incredibly hospitable.
And Real, you did a great job presiding over the whole day and doing all the formalities. How did it make you feel having the Governor here?
Oh, it's just lovely. It's such a privilege, really, to be... Port Adelaide Enfield Council chose us to host the Governor during her day in the council area, and it was such a privilege. It was really wonderful.
And you organised great entertainment, Sophia. I have that Zumba class.
So the Zumba class is run here twice a week. We've just set up a third class every week because it's very popular. They bring life to the centre. The girls have so much fun, and it's people from all walks of life who just come in, have a lot of fun, de-stress, get fit.
And that spread of food today, is that all donated, all of that food?
No. All the volunteers cooked that. We did get a contribution towards the catering, but it was all made by the volunteers.
Wonderful.
So all fresher.
Real, this has been a very active centre, particularly in multicultural, bringing that community together. What do you think has been so special about the centre that it draws people in?
I think it's over a long period of time we've made a particular effort to be in contact with the whole of community in all its diversity and to structure things so that everyone is welcome. And there's a personal touch about it in some ways, I think it has to be, so that everyone that walks through the door feels welcome. And as you may have just seen, everyone leaving wanted to say something and say thank you, what a fabulous day, and they wanted to connect with Sophia. And so we've worked really hard for it to be a whole of community centre.
It was great to see like the SES and the police here and the different clubs. How do you bring them all together? What's it like to try to get everyone here in a room like you did today?
We put out a call to say that the Governor was coming.
Very simple. Yes, that's a great draw card.
We just said that the Governor wanted to meet with community, and they're all part of community. They all work towards what makes community in the centre and in the area. So
we could certainly see that the Governor loved the day and loved
she
connecting.
Did.
So it's wonderful, her support of community centres. So, Sophia and Roy, you put together an amazing event today, but I know that you worked tirelessly behind the scenes. What could help your centre if you had the magic wand?
Additional funding would be wonderful.
I knew you were going to say that.
funding? Do you have enough volunteers?
We do. We've got a really good team of volunteers. To be honest, I feel very happy with the way it's going at the moment. I don't feel we need anything else. We've knitted really well. The volunteers are well supported, they're happy, and I think they always give that bit extra. So if you have a team of 10, it feels like there's 20 on board. Yes, I think it's how you connect and care for the what you have and cherish what you have.
Yeah. Well, congratulations to you both. I felt like I was at someone's family event.
That's what we wanted.
And if that's what you wanted, you achieved it. So well done.
Fantastic.
You. Thank you for having me here today. I really enjoyed
it. Thank you for coming.
And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au. And feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.